Just a moment, due to some technical difficulties. We'll just have Uncle Don here on in a moment. Once again, you can send us email to cfurradio@hotmail.com. If you want to see Joe Bowser go across the country in protest of the airlines having such high fares, making it hard for Canadians to travel anywhere in this country, give us an email, cfurradio@hotmail.com, and tell us if you want to send Joe across the country on a unicycle. Now, Uncle Don.
Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. Good morning, Prince George. This is your Uncle Don, and the show is Uncle Don Reads the Comics. As usual, I've had no trouble assembling material for this show. It is more a process of weeding out than searching for items. The news is full of nasty, heavy stuff. Today we'll be broadcasting not just to Prince George, but we hope we'll be picked up in Lillooet, Fernmount, New South Wales, Vancouver, and Kauai, Hawaii. And my apologies to Bob if I'm mispronouncing that. The CFUR, as in Corporations FU Radio in Prince George. You're tuned to 88.7, and this is the 13th of August. Here's today's food for thought. Israel's going to inoculate all of its citizens, except for the Arab citizens, I'm sure, with a home-produced smallpox vaccine. But how are they producing this vaccine? Can one produce a vaccine for a virus without possessing the live virus? We were recently told that Cuba presents a danger of producing biological weapons because it has developed its own medical research facilities to produce medicines that the Americans have prevented them from buying in international markets. Now it seems that the Israelis have the same potential as the Cubans. Which country has been using weapons of mass destruction against its occupied territories? Can we trust the Israelis? Of course, the United States has granted them white hats, so, just like the U.S., they can do no wrong. As for me, I think I will look into renewing my smallpox vaccination. Before I took on the role of Uncle Don, I was just an inconsequential nobody. Now I have a real slot on a radio station and I receive threatening mail. This makes me a notorious nobody. Maybe this is what I should do with my life when I grow up. Maybe I will have a room named for me here at the university when I die. Just think, the Uncle Don Men's Room. Immortality. Don't forget to send threatening letters to Uncle Don, care of CFUR Radio, 3333 University Way, Prince George, V2N4Z9. In exactly 1 month, I will be celebrating my 20th anniversary with my current wife. Not bad for a guy who swore he would never marry. But that's all right, as I found a woman who had a bad marriage and swore that she would never remarry. We are bound together by our hypocrisy. My stepdaughter married on our anniversary a few years ago, and her marriage lasted a year. Not bad longevity for these days. I want to congratulate the provincial government for doing their bit to lower barriers for the physically challenged. Hey, look, I'm being straight on this. Don't you people take anything seriously? Jesus, I have an audience of bloody cynics. I've been wearing glasses to correct for nearsighted since I was a teenager. I forgot I even have the glasses on until I try to read something or tie my shoelaces. When I last had my eyes tested, way back when my medical premiums covered this, the optometrist asked if I had an eyeglass restriction on my driver's license. Yes, indeed I did. He said that my sight was good enough to have that removed. So the next time my license was up for renewal, I challenged the restriction. The fellow giving the test backed up about 5 paces, held up an arm with 3 fingers raised, and asked, "How many arms am I holding up?" I guessed 1 and passed the test. So now if I feel adventurous, I will blaze down the highway without my glasses on and I am perfectly legal. The sensation is somewhat akin to an acid trip, and it is a real challenge. I thank the government for allowing me this legal high. It does trouble me somewhat to think that there are other folks out there who are legally driving who are as handicapped as I am, but that's all part of the fun. If you see a rusted-out blue Toyota pickup truck coming at you on the highway, it might be me. Treat it as you would an ambulance with lights and siren blazing. Pull off to the side of the road until the danger is past. While in Victoria, I learned how an old person is supposed to drive. I became very conscious of them as I used a bicycle as transportation most of the time. I had been warned early by other bikers, "Watch out for the old guy in a hat. He's the one who will run you over." He never got me, but it's not for lack of trying. Now that I am a legal pensioner, I have the routine down pat. I always drive at the speed limit, except on blind curves when I slow down, and on the straight stretches when I speed up to prevent passing. The yellow markings give me the clues. Solid line means slow down, and dotted line means give it gas. I never use turn signals when I plan to turn. That takes the sport out of driving. When I do use the signals, I will leave them on, as the blinking light on the dash gives a sense of rhythm to driving. Sometimes I will hang a coffee cup on the signal lever to keep it from shutting off on turns. I'm thwarted from achieving the full thrill of provoking road rage in young folks by my lack of a motorhome. If I had a big box vehicle, I could tow an SUV using the above skills and add to the sport by weaving across the yellow line at random times. I could drive up and down the highways, weaving and blocking traffic and playing the game. The game, in case you have not figured it out yet, is to try to accumulate as many vehicles as possible behind you. By driving slowly enough and preventing passing, especially on long weekends, one has a shot at making the Guinness Book of Records in the road comet category. Motorhomes, like comets, are judged by their peers by the length of their tails. Never underestimate the joys of being an old fart. One item in the news lately was about the members of the United States Senate rising in high dudgeon over the excesses of the executives at Global Crossing, Q West Communications, WorldCom, and others of their ilk. Leaving aside the fact that senators are uniformly rich and that election to the Senate costs a small fortune in itself, it is good to hear that someone is making noises about this mess who can actually do something about it. But this rich club of the U.S. Senate won't do anything too drastic, as a lot of the senators on boards are on boards of corporations, and they don't want to damage their own perquisites and prospects. More like a biblical remedy: attack the problem with the jawbone of an ass. I suspect that the good senators are envious. Even though these folks have a pay scale that is above subsistence, and that they have so many perks and privileges that each is issued a booklet listing them, they are still quite capable of envy. The executives of some corporations have helped themselves to piles of money so large that the numbers are more often characteristic of astronomy than finance. Gary Winnick, chairman of Global Crossing, cashed out stock that earned him $734 million before the company collapsed. That's Yankee dollars. Executives of Q West Communications sold off $500 million in stock while issuing fake income figures to stockholders. Bernard Edwards, the CEO of WorldCom, will make an annual pension of $1.5 million. He'll be able to use that pension to repay the loan he took from the company of $408 million. As an aside, I read a piece in The Republic, a small paper out of Vancouver, that suggested this whole load of scandals is a red herring. The article proposed that this whole business is an attempt to blame the fall in stock markets on a small group of greedy individuals and corrupt accounting, while the real problem is the basic failure of capitalism. This seems a bit too pat for me, but is an interesting thought to file away for future reference. While the good senators fulminate over the greed of executives, we can agree that they will not look at one glaring result of this greed. I wonder whether there should be a reasonable limit to the amount of wealth that one person can accumulate. No one dares to touch that question. We have been led to look at accumulated wealth as numbers in a bank account that will ideally be used to create businesses that provide jobs. Sounds nice. But it is a commonplace that wealth is power. A single person with millions of dollars has a power to destroy as well as build. He can buy and sell property and business like pieces like on a monopoly board, leaving a trail of destruction in his wake. And corporations are, under the law, legal persons, just like you and me. There are some corporations, aptly called vultures, which specialize in buying companies with depressed stock prices. They then disassemble these companies, selling the more valuable parts and winding down the rest. They leave behind a trail of empty buildings and fired humans. But they make a profit on this destruction, so they are good. Even when pools of wealth are used for good purposes, which build business and create real jobs, there's still the issue of concentrated power. In a democratic society, these pools of money create islands of power that are not answerable to control by society. Corporations that have accumulated wealth have not been very good at creating jobs. The pattern we have seen lately is the use of this wealth to buy out competitors. Once merged, these new entities go about the chore of shedding jobs, often in thousands, and increasing prices. We've seen that here in British Columbia, where the old BC Telephone Company merged with the Alberta General Telephone, creating the TELUS Corporation. The new company then went on to buy into another company that later became a victim of the collapse of the telecommunications bubble. TELUS did this with borrowed money, and their bonds have now been classified to junk status. How will they respond? in the predictable way, fire employees, and increase prices. I've already talked about the way they slipped $1.25 a month administration fee onto the monthly bills of everyone who subscribed to their flat rate long distance plan. Getting back to wealth, why can we not have a wealth tax like we have an income tax? On the assumption that no one can accumulate more than a certain amount of wealth without screwing someone, how about taking back a chunk of that each year for the benefit of society as a whole? I would be interested in hearing from anyone who can tell me how a man can accumulate, say, $100 million without screwing someone along the way. It might be consumers, suppliers, workers, the environment, or posterity, but this amount of money cannot be earned. There is a category of income that is troubling to me, and I don't know what to think of it. That's typified by the huge salaries paid to professional jocks who play children's games. What of the source of the millions paid to baseball players, golfers, and others who are given outrageous amounts for their efforts? Well, if the suckers want to pay inflated prices for admission to sporting events or sit through endless advertising on television, it is voluntary. I do think that the wealth tax should be applied to all with huge wealth, as this is potential of abuse of this wealth is identical, and society as a whole should appropriate a portion of it. It is especially important to have inheritance taxes to prevent the building of family dynasties. A person should be able to pass wealth on to his survivors, but not more than an amount that can last those survivors through their lives. They did not earn or even steal it. Why should they be granted that power over other citizens? The cubbyhole that passes for a CFUR studio here at the University of Northern British Columbia has a fortuitous crack under the door. It is small enough to prevent the intrusion of bombs or incendiary devices while allowing for envelopes to slide under. Recently, someone slipped an envelope under this door addressed to Uncle Don. It contained what purported to be a transcript of a radio show from Radio Taliban in Afghanistan. The announcer is Kabul Kate, and she appears to be doing an imitation of Tokyo Rose of World War II notoriety. I will read a portion of the transcript to you. "Good evening, GIs and flyboys of the United States of America. This is Kabul Kate, here to entertain you and make you feel at home here in friendly Afghanistan. We realize that you are just here as pawns of the Yankee imperialist government, and that you would rather be home tonight in the arms of your wives or sweethearts, or perhaps both if you are Muslims like us. You should relax now and enjoy our program. Do not think of the men who are comforting those lonely wives and sweethearts as you serve the wealthy capitalists of your country in their oil-soaked president. We in freedom-loving Afghanistan have defeated the Red Army of the Soviet Union, which was here to serve their communist masters. There is no reason to think that you will fare any better, but give it your best shot, boys. We trust that your supply system has brought you plenty of body bags. We want to thank you, flyboys, now for doing the good job you have done in chasing away the pesky Canadians. We tired of their beer cans and their constant declarations that they were not Americans. See, one more North American, you have seen them all. One country down, two to go. Now start bombing those obnoxious British, will you? It has been ages since we threw the Brits out the last time." And then they break to insipid popular Western music. This transcript carries on in the same vein, but it makes no more sense than a Pentagon press release. I will spare you any more. Many thanks to the person or persons who supplied this anonymous contribution. Uncle Don has just received notification of the latest large corporate merger. The International Olympic Committee is merging with a Russian mafia. According to their joint press release, they hope this will create synergies that will increase the efficiency of their formerly separate operations. The Russian mafia arm will continue to handle the fixing of sporting operations and gambling, while the IOC will deal with the bribes from cities and the laundering of mafia money. This is one merger that seems like a perfect fit. This new entity has yet to pick a catchy name and logo. They are offering a substantial prize for the best suggestion for both. Submit any suggestions by email to ioc-mafia@mir.ru. Good luck. Too bad that they will not be issuing stock, as this promises to be a winner. I'm sure that Gordon Campbell will feel comfortable in dealing with this new IOC mafia group when he continues to try to bribe them to hold the future Winter Olympics at Whistler. Winning this would give our beloved provincial government an opportunity to piss away hundreds of millions of dollars they're not available for schools and hospitals. But this would create jobs, right, for 2 weeks. Sounds like a poor investment, especially for those of us in the North. At last a break from my criticisms of the government and corporations. I have a bouquet for one crown corporation now. Really, fair dinkum. A couple of weeks ago, I sent a letter to this radio station from home. I mailed it from a remote mailbox on Monday afternoon. On Tuesday morning when I came in, Joe, the program manager, thanked me for my letter. I was floored. Congratulations to Canada Post for speeding the mail. Loomis could not have done any better for all that they charge. Now, my loyalty to Canada Post is not great enough that I will pay retail prices for their postage stamps. I send a lot of stuff and use a lot of stamps. I buy my stamps from a dealer in Victoria who buys hoarded stamps from people who thought that they were an investment. Canada Post encourages this hoarding as an investment. For the information of anyone out there sitting on unused stamps in hopes of their being worth a lot of money, the dealers usually pay about half face value for these stamps unless you happen to have latched onto a rarity, which is a long shot. Go for it, suckers. I have a deep secret that exposes the generation gap between me and the younger generations. I use Canada Post to deliver letters for me. For all the fuss made about the virtues of internet and email, they have some severe disadvantages. Email is uncertain. I have lost more internet mail than snail mail. Email is too quick to delete. If you write to a politician, you may just save your time and effort. Internet petitions are as useless as they are prolific. People who receive a lot of mail often delete it wholesale. Email is too fast. I have a friend in Australia with whom I used to exchange real letters. When we both got email, we began an exchange in the new medium. I wrote him in the morning and had a reply the same evening. Great, but nothing had happened that day worth recounting, so the exchange died. With snail mail, there is a decent interval between dispatch and delivery while the various postal services do their job of handling, transport, and storage. You ever wonder why we've had so many increases in postal rates? The increased service, which is invisible to us, is storage. But this service is not so evident in domestic mail as illustrated by the personal experience I just recounted. But I have digressed. In the interval between my dispatching a real letter to Australia and my receiving a reply from Sheriff Fang the Unwashed, who goes under a mundane alias in his family life, I will have had a number of experiences worth relating in my return letter to the good sheriff, and so the exchange can continue. And my final bitch about email is filled with junk mail that takes lots of time to download and delete, not to mention the potential for it carrying viruses. With real mail, the junk can be sorted and disposed of at the letterbox. We don't have the luxury of home delivery in the boondocks. And the only viruses might be carried in white powders. But that's a long shot. Uncle Don's enemies don't usually have access to anthrax or smallpox. I hope. This is a great time to travel around the province and visit our fascinating heritage sites. Two of my favorites are the Hubble Farm, just north of here in Prince George, and Barkerville, east of Quesnel. This is a fine time to see both of these places, as the Liberals, intend to sell all of our heritage sites to their capitalist friends. As with other government property, that is property that we all own. They hate to see anything operate without someone sitting on his butt making a profit from it. They deny that they are selling these sites. They are merely turning management over to their friends. I think it will be difficult to tell the difference. Barkerville was rebuilt to become a major tourist attraction through government investment and a lot of volunteer labor. Now it will be given to friends of the current government to turn that public investment into private property. We can expect to see fees rise, commercial exploitation increase, and maintenance deteriorate. Do you think there will be many people willing to volunteer to work there or take low-paid jobs when the fruits of their labors are not added to the public heritage, but just add to someone's profits? Eventually, the public will probably be called back in to pick up the pieces after the capitalists have run our heritage sites into the ground. The people who work to make Barkerville a tourist attraction mostly live in Wells, a small community just down the road. The next town down the road is Quesnel, some 80 kilometers away on a winding road that is treacherous in winter and just plain bad in the summer. But don't expect many families to move into Wells for the summer jobs in Barkerville or winter employment at the new casino. The Quesnel School Board, in their wisdom, has decided to close the Wells Elementary School to save $100,000 a year. Good move for a community that is expected to grow after some hard times of shrinkage. The community of Wells is united in trying to keep the school open, with a number of influential people staging a hunger strike in an attempt to attract the attention of the government in Victoria or the school board in Quesnel. So far, no luck. One item that has been overlooked by most observers of this little drama is that the $100,000 to be saved is overshadowed by the $120,000 raise that has been given to school administrators. The school board justifies this increase as necessary to attract and retain the special talents required of school administrators. Funny thing, but with all of the business collapses and layoffs, administrative talent seems to be in surplus in the current market. The salaries of these talented administrators could probably be cut, and the incumbents would have nowhere to go. And what kind of rare talent does it take to run a school bureaucracy anyway? I would think that a finer talent is required to do the actual job of teaching the kids, but there's no money for teachers. But it is the kids who get lost in all of this maneuvering. If the Quinnell School Board really wanted to balance the meager budget that Victoria has dumped on it, they should spend a few bucks and hire Arthur Anderson to do their books. Anderson accountants with their special talents could turn the school board's budget deficit into a surplus with no effort. In fact, if they were pressed, I am sure that their skills could turn that deficit into a profit. It has been done before with larger organizations. My brother, while living in New Jersey and trying to find himself, became an apprentice carpenter. The program was run by a union which he claimed was hopelessly corrupt. In any case, he eventually was declared to be a journeyman carpenter. However, he told me that all he ever did was framing in new houses and subdivisions. He never learned the skills that one expects of a journeyman carpenter, but he was a whiz at framing. For decades, we have relied on importing skilled labor rather than training our own people. This has had the dual effect of robbing other societies of their most talented citizens while cheating our own children of the opportunity of taking these better jobs. Now we are finding that the pool of people in Europe, especially, who want to come to North America is dwindling. Yes, we can still suck workers away from third world countries, but the same people who refuse to tax their own social class for training are resisting the infusion of people who will become minorities that they despise. There is an undeniable correlation between right-wing frugality and racism, and I defy anyone to refute that. A decade or two ago, we were informed by the right-wing think tanks that our medical costs were getting out of hand because we had too many doctors and nurses. This was a curious conclusion because, according to the neoclassical economics that the right-wingers embrace, a labor surplus should cause a fall in wages. Their answer, adopted by governments, was to decrease the number of nurses, doctors, and other skilled workers in the system and cut back on the schools that were training their replacements. Good thinking. We are now seeing the fruits of that past frugality, which did cut costs in the short run. Of course, skilled people do not sit by the phone waiting to be called back to work. The laid-off doctors, nurses, and technicians moved to other jurisdictions where they were welcome. Our loss was the gain of other provinces and the American states. Now the liberals are going through the motions of trying to lure these same people back to staff our depleted medical system. But if you were a skilled worker making a good living somewhere else where you were appreciated, would you want to come back to British Columbia and work for these yahoos? Not bloody likely. Could it be that there was a hidden agenda hiding behind the alleged quest for savings? Canadians have a strong affection for their public medical system, so the provincial so-called Liberal Party destroyers could not attack it head-on. If you want to destroy something that the people cherish, you must discredit it first. People who have long waits for mediocre service will scream for any change that will ease their pain. In this case, the only alternative offered to the public is an American-style, chaotic non-system. And there are American corporations lined up at the border waiting an opportunity to provide medical services to those who can pay. We average slobs may not welcome the destruction of Medicare, but the rich surely want it. They can have their taxes cut drastically if they do not have to contribute to a public system. A small portion of their savings will allow them to purchase top-end medical insurance that will allow them to be serviced separately from the hoi polloi, with whom they must now rub shoulders in the hospitals and doctors' offices. The rest of the savings can be invested in the profitable medical corporations. It is a win-win prospect for the rich, but a lose-lose one for the rest of us. While we are being prepared for private medicine, we are also facing the prospect of the dismantling of the public school system. The idea is the same. Run the current system into the ground and drive people into the arms of the private providers. Our provincial destroyers are cutting funding for the public school system while still giving generous subsidies to the private schools. The current attack on public schools is very clever, too clever for the current crop of liberal dolts to come up with by themselves. Would I be overly cynical to suspect that they are being advised by those who want to run the private schools which would replace the public ones? Does the Catholic Church applaud the demise of public schools? How about those fundamentalist yahoos who drool at the prospect of poisoning young minds with their superstitious bullshit? Draw your own conclusions. I know that enlarging class sizes is a sure recipe for mediocrity. Both the bright and the dull are left behind as teaching of skills takes a back seat to maintaining order and discipline. So the public schools will turn out future citizens who do not have the life skills to keep free of the justice system while cheating those who might become the doctors and other skilled workers that we will be needing. Good going. The foreseeable result of the destruction of our public schools can be seen in the third world, where education is a privilege of the rich and the ignorant poor fight for scraps from the tables of the rich. Is this the model we want for Canada? Is it our prospect to become the Brazil of the North? I look forward to receiving irate letters. Do not bother telephoning unless you want to encourage my program director. He loves controversy and judges the effectiveness of the station by the number of complaints. Write to Uncle Don, care of CFUR, 3333 University Way, Prince George, BC, Canada, V2N4Z9. I warn you that anything you write may be read and ridiculed on the air. It looks like Canada may have to gear up for company again, if or when the United States invades Iraq in violation of the United Nations Charter and a slew of international laws. We may see an influx of deserters from the Yankee armed forces seeking refuge here. This will not be like it was during the Vietnam War, as the draft has been suspended. But even in the all-professional U.S. military today, there may be those men and women of conscience, who will not want to be part of another slaughter. And if the war goes on, the involuntary induction may resume. American men are still forced to register for the draft at 18, and their system is dormant, not dead. The new twist this time is that Canada may be involved in this war. Chrétien is very busy cozying up to son of a Bush, and he may just seek to curry favor by joining in this mad adventure. This means that deserters will not be welcome here officially, and we may have our own deserters to help. I, for one, will always have room in my home for Yankee refugees who do not want to destroy a foreign society at the whim of a criminal president. I have faith that Canada will not be a party to this mad imperialist adventure. I have taken the step to writing to our beloved Prime Minister, advising him that I do not support Canadian participation in any war against the people of Iraq. And I have taken the liberty of writing to our Queen, who resides in England for some reason, asking that she lean on our boy Chrétien and to avoid our involvement. She must carry some weight with the PM. Well, this is Uncle Don concluding today's show of Uncle Don Reads the Comics. Don't forget to write. This is CFUR Radio at 88.7 FM. I guess that will take care of the little bastards for another week.